You're listening to LawPod UK. It's a podcast that discusses developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. LawPod UK is produced by the barristers at 1 Crown Office Row and is presented by Rosalind English.
Brexit news is coming thick and fast, and it's hard to get a handle on what's going on amidst all the intense coverage. If you've been following Catherine Bunnard's series on the subject, you'll be pleased to hear she's rushed out another episode, this time on the political deal for the signing of the official withdrawal agreement. Hot foot on Sunday's summit, Catherine considers the political declaration with journalist Bonnie Soames.
So the political deal has something in it for everyone. It's a smorgasbord of goodies aimed to appeal to every constituency. There's an awful lot of adjectives in it, lots of fine words. Adjectives, for example, they talk about an ambitious, broad, deep and flexible partnership. All sorts of good things in there. But while Jeremy Corbyn said it's a lot of waffle, actually it's more than that. It'd be unfair to say this is a pure blindfold Brexit.
Is it? It's 26 pages. You say it's not waffle or a blindfold Brexit, as the opposition alleged. Then what is it? Is this political declaration legally binding in any way?
It's not legally binding. Unlike the withdrawal agreement, that's the blockbuster, the 585-page text, which sitting on the table in front of us here, that's legally binding, and that's legally binding under Article 50. But the political declaration is the blueprint, the direction of travel for the future negotiations post-Brexit. But both of them have to go to Westminster for approval as a package in the meaningful vote.
It's called, the political declaration, an aspirational document. It's what both sides, the EU and the UK, would like to happen during the 21-month transition period that follows our Brexit on the 29th of March 2019 next year. But does it mention things like the single market, the customs union, how we're going to do these separate trade deals? Does it give us any hint on those contentious issues?
No, and indeed there's some inherent contradictions in the text. If you read the first page and you're a Brexiteer, you'd be quite pleased with what you see, because there's some nice statements in there about the fact that the UK will be able to have an independent trade policy and there will be the end of free movement of people between the Union and the United Kingdom. That's paragraph 4. But if you bury into the text and you look a bit closer, you look at paragraph 23, for example, the document says a future agreement will build on and improve on the single customs territory provided for in the withdrawal agreement, which obviates the need for checks on rules of origin. Now, that to me sounds much more like a customs union than a free trade agreement. So you've got both. You've got customs union elements of this and also free trade agreement elements. Why does it matter? If we're in a free trade agreement, very much like the Canada one, we will be able to have an independent trade policy, which is what it says on the first page, and therefore be able to strike our own trade deals. If we stay in the EU's customs union, we will not be able to strike trade deals in respect of goods. Why would we want to stay in the customs union at all? Well, because it makes sure that there is much more frictionless trade. It would deal with the problem of the Northern Ireland border. And of course, therefore, you wouldn't need the much hated backstop.
So it's vague, but to the point of being contradictory.
In places, absolutely. And of course, the document has been drafted with a view to getting the package, that's the withdrawal agreement, and this text through Westminster, something we know is going to be a challenge for Theresa May when it happens on probably the 11th or 12th of December.
Now, I know that you think the 585-page withdrawal agreement has fine legal minds behind it, that it is a well-drafted and put-together document. Can we say the same of the political declaration? Wouldn't cynics say it's deliberately contradictory? It's deliberately vague?
Yes, I think the clue's in the title. It's a political declaration. It's not a legal declaration. I think the other thing that's quite striking and something we suspected when we discussed this last time is the reason for the level of detail and work that's gone into the withdrawal agreement is because it's providing much of the template for what will go into any future agreement between the UK and the EU. For example, the provisions on dispute resolution, which are set up in the withdrawal agreement. Remember, we said that the political joint committee, an arbitration panel, and the possibility of the Court of Justice being involved if a point of EU law is at stake. That framework is being transferred into the political declaration and so will also be used to deal with disputes under the future agreement. And likewise, a single customs territory. That language is incredibly familiar. Where have we seen it before? It's in the Northern Ireland Protocol of the withdrawal agreement. So all the work in the withdrawal agreement is paving the way, is providing the building blocks for something in the future.
So that actually means, if I'm interpreting you correctly, the political declaration does have some legal validity, some legal force.
It doesn't have legal force in and of itself, but what we're seeing is a continuum between the divorce and the future relationship, which makes sense. Why would you want to set up one dispute resolution mechanism under the withdrawal agreement and something else under the future arrangements?
Now, we said the political declaration was thin. It's 26 pages. You've just told me it has 147 clauses. What's the shortest clause? And probably, can we pick out the best and most detailed ones too?
So the shortest clause, the one that made me smile most, given the enormity of the subject matter, is the one on space. And the one on space is on page 19, heading F. It's a one-sentence paragraph. The parties should consider appropriate arrangements for cooperation on space. And I think that means space as in planets, not space as in who's going to have the largest share of the filing cabinet.
And then other issues like data protection.
Yeah, more detail on there, and there's hope there that there will be an adequacy decision between the UK and the EU by the end of 2020, i.e. by the end of the transition period.
Now, two other contentious issues are services and mobility of labour too. I mean, is there anything in these two documents, the withdrawal document and the political declaration, that tell us about the UK's future relationship with Europe on these two issues?
So on services, as we know from Chequers, Theresa May was not that interested in services, and what she was aspiring to was not much more than you find in the WTO agreement, the GATS, the General Agreement on Trade and Services. What we see in the political declaration is a hope that there will be deeper integration than you find in the GATS, but not a whole lot more. And indeed, it's this part of the political declaration that looks very much like a GATS-style agreement. It looks much more like a trade agreement. There's express provision on financial services, and it looks like it's going to be on the basis of equivalence, which is better than nothing. But on the other hand, it does mean that the EU can change its mind at any stage that the UK's regulation of financial services is not deemed to be equivalent. It certainly falls way short of passporting. On mobility, of course, this is the vexed issue. And I think what's really striking about the tone of the debate recently is that the main way that Theresa May has been selling this political declaration and the withdrawal agreement is to say free movement of persons will stop. For those on the Remain side, they're saying this is an awful lot of pain to go through just to limit free movement. But if you look at the part of the text on mobility, it really is very unambitious. It's all about taking back control of our borders, very consistent with Theresa May's message, and very clear that national immigration law will apply. There is a hint, which is good news for universities, that there may be special provision for entry and stay for the purposes of research, study, training and youth exchanges. But this falls way, way short of free movement of persons as we know it now. But don't forget, this is in respect of future migration. For EU nationals who are already in the UK, they will be protected under the withdrawal agreement and they will be able to apply for settled status.
And that's during transition?
That's during transition, absolutely.
Okay, and the other thing is the Northern Ireland border. And I think there's mention of technology there.
This is a good example of the political declaration having something in it for everyone. So You'll remember that Theresa May's, one of her suggestions for dealing with the problems of the Northern Ireland border was the rather terribly named MAXFAC, Maximum Facilitation. And this involved quite a lot of use of technology. Now, as we've discussed in previous podcasts, the technology just isn't there at the moment. Nevertheless, you've got statements in this political declaration that says clearly that if technology is delivered, developed, to be able to deal with the problems of the Northern Ireland border, it should be considered. So MAXFAC has reared its head again here in respect of one way of dealing with the Northern Ireland border, but it's going to take time.
Now, two outstanding issues that will have to be tackled before the signing of the withdrawal agreement on Sunday are fishing and Gibraltar. Any inkling of how those two issues may play out from both these documents?
Gibraltar is, of course, complicated, and there are issues with the Spanish government at the moment. They've got their own elections, and of course Gibraltar is always a good drum to beat in Spain. It's highly resonant there. It's widely said that, and indeed the Spanish Prime Minister has said, he is going to veto the withdrawal agreement. That's the Article 50 text. He can't, because Article 50 spells out that the withdrawal text can be approved by qualified majority voting. It's actually super qualified majority voting, so 20 out of 27 states. So he has no veto powers. That said, the EU does like to proceed by unanimity where it can, or at least by consensus. So it will be worried that Spain is causing this difficulty at this last moment, because up until now, as we've seen, the EU 27 have been remarkably united behind Michel Barnier, the Commission's negotiator, and has been very capable of speaking with one voice. It probably means that Pedro Sanchez is putting a marker down for the next stage of the negotiations, and he needs to have his voice heard now, but it will not block at EU level the withdrawal agreement.
And fishing, France isn't very happy.
Yes, it's complicated, isn't it? Because, in fact, what we've learnt recently, and as we all know, this has been a learning process. In fact, the UK fishes a lot of herring and mackerel, which we export to the EU, but a lot of the cod and haddock that we eat is actually imported from elsewhere in the EU. So the very fact that we can take back control of our fishing waters might mean that cod and haddock that we have on our plate with chips becomes in short supply. So the fishing issue is complicated, and of course fish are no respecters of borders, but we also know that a lot of those who voted leave in fishing communities were concerned about the common fisheries policy. We will be leaving the common fisheries policy, and remember, Norway is also not in the common fisheries policy, so it may be that we have some sort of annual negotiation about how much access both sides will have.
Now, finally, if we're looking at these two documents now, the first time we've had sight of both the withdrawal agreement and the political declaration this week, did the UK government and Theresa May succeed in having their cake and eating it?
Yeah. A small bit of cake, shall we say. Eating it, the proof, to mix the metaphors, will be in the pudding when the political declaration is turned into a legal text. Now, this will be a really significant enterprise. It takes, on average, 42 months to negotiate a trade deal. And this, of course, is a complicated trade deal. Now, some of the thinking's already been done in the context of the withdrawal agreement, but as this text, a political declaration, is just that, a political declaration, if there's a change of government, all bets are off. And it may be that a new government will want something different. If it's Labour, perhaps something closer to the Norway-style model. If it's a hard Brexiteer who gets into office, it may be much more like Canada. What we have in this text looks rather like Canada, with some rather small pluses.
But there is some legal validity to the political declaration, because, as you say, it cross-refers to clauses within the withdrawal agreement, and it can be sorted out by the European Court of Justice. Is that right?
The Court of Justice will not be able to rule on the political declaration itself, but the Court of Justice may well be able to rule on aspects of the withdrawal agreement. The really interesting question that we will have discussed in detail next week is the Whiteman case, which is going before the Court of Justice. Now, the Whiteman case is a reference from the Scottish courts asking the question, can the Article 50 notification be revoked? And if it can be revoked, what are the conditions? Can we do it unilaterally, or has it got to be done bilaterally, i.e. has the EU got to agree to it? Now, exceptionally, the entire bank of the judges at the Court of Justice are going to hear this case, which indicates just how important this issue is. Why does it matter? Because at the moment, Theresa May is still more or less presenting the narrative as my deal or no deal. My deal, that's my withdrawal agreement plus the political declaration, or no deal and chaos on the 29th of March. The Whiteman case is saying, actually, there is a third option, and that is to withdraw the Article 50 notification. Now, of course, it'll be up to the Court of Justice to decide whether the Article 50 notification can indeed be withdrawn, and if so, on what terms. But the case next week is paving the way for something really quite significant.
So we're still in a massive grey area, a massive area of basically aspirational generalities, but the specifics still needing to be ironed out.
Absolutely, particularly in respect to the future trade agreement. But I think we should conclude on a more positive note that the fact is Theresa May has made it through this week. Remember, it wasn't even clear whether she would still be in office by today. So she is at least stable, even if not strong.
She's up in the opinion polls.
Absolutely, 13 points up or so. So, I mean, people, I think, have a grudging admiration for her tenacity and her determination. The question is, do you like the deal? And what's interesting is that both sides are objecting to the deal package. The Leavers, for obvious reasons, that they think it keeps us too close. The Remainers, because they think it takes us too far away, because, of course, they want to stay in. And so at the moment, the problem with a compromise of this sort is that nobody's very happy with it.
LawPod UK is presented by Rosalind English and produced by One Crown Office Row. For more editions of LawPod UK, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and recommend us to a friend.